Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about a few nutrients that can really make a difference in helping your heart, your brain, and slowing down the aging process. And I'm going to begin by talking about NAD, one of the superstars, one of about eight superstars, and why it was one of the nutrients in the protocol for our anti-aging clinical study, and why everyone should be paying attention to it, and it's easy to research. Also today, I didn't have time yesterday to play a clip between two individuals having a discussion. Matt Taibbi was talking about the left is the new right. It's literally gone in that direction. And he is talking about a former Evergreen professor who had the benefit of being tenured, along with his wife, also tenured at Evergreen. And lo and behold, he was attacked by this new woke culture, shaming him, and the president of the university let him go. And you think that would be the end of it. Well, it's not quite, because now what's happening is all across the United States, young teenagers, 17, 18, 19 years old, are able to control the university. Think not? Well, wait till you hear the discussion. But more importantly, the universities are now fully captured. So you can't rely upon an intellectually honest discourse on our social, political, ideological, or personal issues, unless it's in a topic that is non-challenged, like in architecture or engineering or physics. But you get into the humanities and you get into the basic health sciences, oh yeah. They even some students decided they didn't want to take math anymore. So they said math was racist. Instantly, overnight, math is racist. No one's capable of argument, not even mathematicians. So everybody just kind of holds their head down, allowing these dancing clown idiots to get away with this. It's time that the adults in the room either stood up or leave the room, because your life is about to be controlled in ways you never imagined. It's not me saying this. It's these two individuals. And Brett Weinstein and Matt. It'll be about a 10-minute discussion. But also, I wanted today to share some insights about what happens to other cultures. Almost every culture that has come to the United States has come because they were persecuted, because they were denied the ability to be able to live a life in peace and harmony. They were outcasts. They were killed, tortured, assets taken away from them. The French Huguenots, Louis XIV did that. But also think of all the other countries where you came here, you had no advantages. You worked your ass off. So how exactly are these people not entitled to be respected as human beings? Well, that's what's happening. So we're going to do a history course today from history.com. Also today, Bill Gates, you think he's articulate? You think he could defend his position? He's not a scientist. He has no degrees at all in health, medicine, and yet he's the most powerful person on the planet when it comes to this vaccine. So you're going to let this guy run our entire health program? Big mistake. So we're going to play a little clip, short clip, where he's being interviewed. It's a funny clip, by the way. And you can go to prn.fm and download it so you can see it. It's something you got to see to appreciate how funny it is, because this guy took O'Donnell's, I don't know which network she's on, but either CNN or MSNBC, and she was interviewing Bill Gates and just happened to have brought up the fact that this test with this company that he started that's going to get the contract for the COVID virus found that over 51% of the people who got the vaccine had serious side effects. And how she asked the question and how he tries to answer it was funny. So, but remember, this is real life. This is actually happening. Oh, and by the way, on yesterday's program, I played a clip of a group of very courageous physicians who were putting their careers and reputations on the line. They stood outside on the steps of the Supreme Court, each one coming from a different background. None of them knew each other, but they all had something in common. They knew that what we've been told about COVID was not correct. It was either half-truths or full lies. So they had done their homework, they had their clinical experience, and they just told it like it was. I said at the time, I said, that person is going to be targeted. Well, that person yesterday, that physician, was attacked mercilessly and then fired. And the person was fired simply because the hospital where she works doesn't want her working there anymore because she was, quote, an embarrassment of some kind. So now, what do you think happens, and this is a larger philosophical question, I would like you to address it. What do you think happens when you decide that these are not important enough issues for you to be personally bothered by? You have your own issues in life, you have your own responsibilities, true enough, and so you can't be bothered. And before we get into this too far, I just want to give you a little example of this, give you something to think about. And by the way, please call in and share your points of view. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. About 5 months ago, when I was in Manhattan, before I went down to do my clinical study, a person stopped me on the street and mentioned that, why didn't I do more talking about nutrition. I said, well, I talk about nutrition, wow, every single day, plus I'm counseling people, plus I've written over 100 books and over 100 documentaries and webinars and health support groups and 44 clinical studies. That's all I do. Yeah, but, you know, sometimes you talk about other topics, I just turn it off. So if I'm talking about the environment, you turn it off. If I'm talking about human rights, you turn it off. Talking about social issues that directly impact you, whether you choose to realize it or not, well, you know, it doesn't really impact me. So in that moment, and we were at a stoplight, and this person just come up and said hello at the stoplight, the light had changed. And I said, do you consider yourself a gracious person? So instead of crossing the light, the person looks at me with a very quizzical expression. I said, do you happen by chance to take any supplements? Do you take a multiple vitamin or vitamin C? Yeah, of course I do. How many do you take? I don't know, you know, about 7 or 8. Which ones? Coenzyme Q10 for my heart. I take multiple vitamin. I take extra vitamin C, and I take the omega-3 fatty acids. I said, what if I ask you, would you spend 5 years and probably $500,000 out of your own pocket to go out there and fight the special interest groups which had captured the FDA and the regulatory agency that oversees your right to take vitamins? He said, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, well, let me tell you something. Back in the early 1980s, I was informed by a legislative aide for an important legislator that the pharmaceutical lobbyists were lobbying to get rid of all vitamins. You could only take a vitamin, a tiny amount. How small? 1.6 milligrams of B1, 1.2 milligrams of B2, and 1-something milligrams of B6, and then 90 milligrams of supplements that would be banned altogether as harmful. And you would first have to go on a regular basis to get a prescription, which means you'd have to have a medical examination to get a prescription. You'd then have to go to a pharmacy to buy your vitamin. So then you would pay, let's say, $20 for 10 milligrams of zinc, plus add in on the cost of the prescription. And that would immediately kill all vitamin sales. But the only ones allowed to sell or manufacture the vitamins would be the pharmaceutical industry. So it would be an enormous profit because it was competition for them. Why take, let's say, a cough medicine when you could take vitamin C or vitamin D? In any case, they were moving quietly but firmly to get this into a law. We tried everything we could, and I couldn't get anyone that I knew in Congress or the media to be interested in this. So then I started a campaign, and the campaign was to show how absurd this was. The first thing I had to do is collect all the scientific literature, and this is before computers. So we literally had to read thousands upon tens of thousands of articles, my brothers, Stephen and Howard, myself, every day. And I collected a huge volume. It filled three giant cartons. And I took it down to Senator Proxmire, who said he would be interested in this cause if we were able to provide him with quality documentation from PubMed. I remember him saying to me in one of our conversations, and he was very accessible, and this is pre-9/11, so you could actually walk into the Senate building or House building. And he said, Gary, I know about dairy, being from Wisconsin, but I don't know about nutrition, but I do exercise, and I do take my vitamins. I said, okay. Well, 3 months went by, and I provided him with this case, and he said, wow. He said, I didn't know any of this existed. I said, this is what you have to share with your legislative friends on both sides of the aisle so we have unity. Then I did a tour, and the tour took me over 2 years. And I was on ABC Network and WABC at the time, and as a result, I was able to gather a large national audience to call their legislators and say no to making foods and vitamins into drugs, or even to discuss they wanted to make it against the law for any nutritionist or dietitian to associate any disease with a food, either in the cause or prevention. So you couldn't say vitamin D deficiency causes such and such. You couldn't say by taking eating carrots, this prevents night blindness or anything. So this complete reality disconnect. And I did a series of debates. And then we started this whole campaign about, do you want to get a $30 prescription for a $10 bottle of vitamin C so that you can have what would be in a glass of orange juice? And that seemed to register with people. As a result, after all that effort, we won. And I said, so, you think I shouldn't talk about the politics of science or medicine? But had I not, you wouldn't have any ability to take any vitamin. In fact, no American, not a single American, would be able to take any of the vitamins they take today and any of the potencies and coenzyme Q10. You wouldn't be allowed to. They make it through fatty. No, we're not allowed to. Ginkgo and Hawthorne, none of those would you be allowed to. That's how close you came to fascism within medicine based upon captured organizations, the FDA, by a whole industry, the pharmaceutical industry, working behind the scenes and control the media to prevent you from having your freedom of choice. Now, in retrospect, I could reverse it and say, why are you taking any supplements? And you're going to say, well, because they prevent. How do you know? How do you know? Have you done your homework? Well, no, I'm listening to you. Ah, oh, so you're listening to me who's done your homework for you. Why in the hell should I care about your worthless ass if you're so selfish that all you want to know is something about, you know, whether to eat salted or unsalted pickles? God, what have you actually done to make it a better world except have the ability to complain about something? So, yeah, that was just a little reminder that you wouldn't be able to take any vitamin today if we hadn't gone out there and fought your fight for you. Okay? You wouldn't be able to see any holistic doctor. You wouldn't see a chiropractor, a homeopath, a naturopath, because none of them would be allowed to exist. Because every single one was being attacked. Every doctor, Robert Atkins, Warren Levin, were being attacked and their license taken away from them, or if they were allowed to practice, only with the supervision of another physician that they had to pay for in their office. And they couldn't do any of this alternative stuff. Until we went to bat. That was a 10-year effort. And we finally got a law passed in New York and then California, everywhere, allowing you. Until that time, over 100 really good holistic doctors had lost their license to practice medicine. Carl Humiston in New York, Robert Vance in Utah, James Privateer in California, etc. In fact, I remember the day that I got a call from Warren Levin. And Warren was a nice guy, very bright. I mean, he was one of the most understated people in his knowledge. He had deep knowledge. He just didn't brag about it. And he said, Gary, I'm in a lot of trouble. I said, what is it? He said, New York State's going to take away my license, and they've got this guy going to testify against me, and he's testified against other people, and he always wins. And I said, why are you calling me, Warren? Well, because I've spent like $250,000 on my lawyer, and we haven't even got to the trial part of this, and I just don't think we're going to win. Do you know anything we could do? I said, of course. I said, you remember, Warren, 10 years ago, 41 of you met my office, and I suggested you put 1% of your annual earnings into a foundation that would have lawyers and researchers that would show that what you were practicing was legitimate science and medicine and be there to defend you if you should all be attacked, and you all thought it was a great idea, but no one decided to put up a penny. And I said, that was just pathetic. That showed me the lack of true humanistic and selfless approach, meaning you're all greedy. I told him this. And by the way, I would say that to every single holistic physician I've ever met, ever. And in any case, I said, all right, I'll go to bat for you. So I found out the person he was going to. I cannot go into the details of what I gave him. I'll simply say this. When Warren's team challenged the doctor was disqualified as not an expert. Warren's license was saved. He called me afterwards and he said, man, he said, where did you get that stuff? I said, that's what I do, Warren. I'll find out anything I need to find out about someone. And I said, but your lawyers could have done the same. They just didn't. I wasn't pleased with that. What I consider the greed of the doctors defending these, the lawyers defending these doctors. In any case, by 10 years worth of effort, we, who are not medical doctors, were working for those medical doctors on our dime and our time to save their practice so they could keep all the money they earned, even though they never said thank you or, you know, did anything to show that they appreciated that freedom of choice. It's amazing when the very people whose careers you save and keep out of jail or keep out of losing their license don't understand how they should have and didn't, not a single one of them, not Stuart Berger, none of them, defend their own practices proactively. So that's another question. So if you're going out today to see your chiropractor, we saved the profession. Two people. One you've never heard of, Joe Lisa, an outstanding journalist. I highly commend him for his courageous journalism. He and I together both got the same identical package of information from a source that we never determined who it was inside the AMA, and that led to a series of articles. I wrote 6 articles, and I think he wrote, I'm aware of 2. He may have written more. That led to a lawsuit, the largest against the AMA in its history, Sherman Antitrust Violations Restraint of Trade, because chiropractic was considered in all of medicine an unscientific cult, and it was on its deathbed because no insurance would cover it. It was being denigrated, and people weren't even going into the profession. So after that case was won, and the AMA lost, and the 12 major organizations, medical organizations also settled or lost, then chiropractic was allowed to be considered a legitimate healing profession and no longer could be denigrated. Of course, what happened was they shifted all their files over to the people outside who went on to use it, and those are the people today that we would say are the Wikipedia skeptics, the same animus, the same bias that the AMA had, they've simply carried on. But we stopped a 25-year crusade. That's why you can see a chiropractor. That's why you can see an osteopath. And that's why you can see a holistic dentist. Had we not fought that fight, you would not have had any of those ability to see any of those people because none of them would exist. Those are just some of the examples of why. Do not be so short-sighted and selfish and self-obsessed. You can't see that there's a battle going on. That's why I did my show yesterday explaining that these industries we've trusted have been fully captured. And until you understand that education is now fully captured and medicine has been fully captured, the fact that they fired a doctor yesterday for telling the truth, the fact that they've been scrubbed and shamed off off all platform, and that only pro-vaccine is promoted on Wikipedia. Anything that's anti-vaccine is now relegated to quack or fringe conspiracy theory, and yet it has the real science. So right now, journalism has been captured, the media has been captured, so every place you turn, it's been captured. You just may not be aware of it. So as long as you stay plugged into it, you're going to have misinformation. In any case, let's now open with health and nutrition. It just popped in my mind about how people who don't fight in the fight shouldn't be talking about the fight. If you're not willing to get out there and get your ass on the firing line and write the letters, do the demonstrations, don't complain about anything you're not getting because the people who actually are committing themselves to saving your worthless ass. So that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break here. And when we come back, I'm going to play you this conversation. I think you will find it of interest, some of the conversation. I'm going to do two back-to-back because I think they're both important. One is Why You Won't Have a Career by Jordan Peterson. It's short. And the other is this conversation between Brett Weinstein and Matt Taibbi about the corruption that we're living in now, institutional corruption, personal corruption, fear of facing it, fear of the attacks that come against you, and most importantly is something they say at the end of the very conversation. Please pay attention to it, because for me it was the most important thing they said. What is going to happen, in all probability, is that in order to secure this victory, which is almost certain at this point, unless something radical changes, it's not about Biden becoming president. It's about who's going to be the vice president. More importantly, what they're promising all of the people who are willing to be out there to be the foot soldiers is they're going to let them be unleashed with the power to do whatever they want. And that they're going to do. So what you see now in Portland and around the country, this is just the beginning. On a scale of 1 to 100, this is a 4. What's going to happen after the election is going to go ramp up to 100 plus. What do you think the average person who sees everything coming down around them and no institution can they rely upon, what do you think they're going to do? What would you do? That's coming at you. Back in a moment.
Something I can give in exchange for everything you give to me. Read my mind, you make me feel just fine.
I want to do a video directed towards young women because I'd like to tell them what lies they're being taught and are going to be taught. And there's a couple of lies. And the first lie is you're going to have a career. Okay, no, a tiny fraction of people have careers. Maybe 2%. Okay, most people have jobs.
Yeah.
And the definition of a job is an activity that you get paid for because you wouldn't do it voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so first of all, you're not going to have a career. You're going to have a job. Second, most jobs aren't very desirable. They're not very meaningful. They're not the center place for your life. And even if you have a career, like, for example, if you go into law, you're going to find that it's very, very demanding and very, very difficult and very, very stressful and very, very competitive. And you're not going to find the fulfillment of your desire, for example, for intimate, close interpersonal relationships in a competitive domain like law.
No.
It's just not going to happen. And if you go and be a doctor, then you're going to be looking at 60-hour weeks. And so careers are exceptionally demanding. You're never done. You're always working. And jobs are people pay you to do jobs because the jobs are difficult and unpleasant and require responsibility and difficult decisions. Okay, so that's the first lie. The second lie is that career or job is actually the fundamental purpose of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true. The most important thing in life is your family, your relationship, and your children. And you might not know that when you're 19, because what the hell do you know when you're 19? You don't know anything. 7 years ago, you were 12. You don't know anything.
Yeah.
And what you don't understand is that by the time you're 40, if you don't have a family and children, you are one lost soul. Because as you get older, you know, and I mean, I've had a very good career and it's still going just great guns. And I don't expect it to end, you know, unless someone gets particularly irritated with me for another 15 or 20 years. But I can tell you that despite all that, despite the fact that I'm absolutely fascinated by my job and my career, and I'm in a very fortunate position because it's an extraordinarily interesting job. Ever since I had kids, they were the most important thing in my life. And as I get older, that just becomes more and more and more clear. And so Western people, Carl Jung commented about this at one point. He thought that because the fundamental archetypal hero of Western culture was Christ, and Christ died when he was in his early 30s, that we really didn't have a good model for the latter half of life. It's a very interesting kind of idea. But I can say with virtual certainty that if you're not oriented, if you're not situated with a family in the latter half of your life, you're, especially if you also don't have a partner, you're one lonesome, isolated, miserable creature.
I imagine and the suicide rates for people like that are quite high, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, and increasingly, we're going to have a society where there's a tremendous number of isolated old women who have no one. Now, that's partly because men die young, too, compared to women.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, you were talking about this famous feminist who didn't have children. It's like not having children, and you'll wake up when you're 35, if you're not careful, if you're female, and you'll think, uh-oh, I don't have any time left to have kids. And that is not fun. That is not a good realization. And then maybe you'll be on the assisted reproduction carousel for the next 10 years. And believe me, that's like having a near fatal disease. That is not entertaining. Life in some ways isn't that complicated. There are fundamental, like people think, well, what should I do with my life? Okay, well, the first answer to that is do what other people have always done, unless you're certain that you're exceptional in some manner. And even if you are, you're probably only exceptional in one direction, not in all. So what do? Well, you get as educated as you can so that you can make yourself useful, so that you have a skill or multiple skills that other people will pay you validly for. Mm-hmm. And not only because of that, but because you need to contribute to your own maintenance and to the health and survival of the broader community. Okay, so you have to do that. Get your act together. Get yourself a trade or get educated. Mm. Then you need a job. Then you need an intimate partner. Then you need a family. It's like, and if you miss any of those, then you're in trouble. Now, you might not think so because you might be cynical about it or prematurely cynical, which is so many young women, you ask them at 19, well, do you want to have children? They think, well, I don't think so. It's like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And why people have decided that you should be some sort of authority about it is nothing but an index of how pathological our culture has become. You don't know anything. You're a child. You haven't read anything. You haven't accomplished anything. Your parents have taken care of you up to this point. And you can pronounce on something as profound as how society should be constructed. It's absurd. And it's dangerous for the women because they don't understand where they're headed. And other women lie to them. They don't sit the 19-year-olds down and say, look, you know, like, you should pursue a career. You're smart. You've got something to offer. And society needs your intelligence. But you better look the hell out because women have complicated lives and they also have to have a family. And you're going to struggle like mad to figure out how to balance those two things. And nobody's going to help you.
So you could agree or disagree. I'm interested in your perspective, especially since people, the younger they are, so absolutely 100% certain that whatever their choice is, it's the correct choice. Then ask how many of those people would have made that choice if they didn't have the influence of other people, wiser or less wise, goading them or guiding them. Do we have, as other cultures do and always have, and we at one time did, the wise woman, the wise man who were there, patient and knowing because they'd lived a lifetime, they'd seen the best and worst of human nature in their own actions. So they had experience, and they realized that there is no smooth, easy way of getting through life. We are all going to be up and down at times, seemingly in impossible situations, and then we have those moments of bliss and remarkable levity and smoothness of living, especially if we're around people that we can love and share our time and energy and vibrate with, and our friends. And how good do we feel when we have wonderful friends? Just the joy of being with people that know us in ways others don't and are there to share the fun and make fun of ourselves. Those are special moments. And yet today, I'm concerned that a large segment of two generations, the millennials and the X generation, are distracted from what is essential, and as a result, a lot of loneliness, despair, depression, suicidality, and apathy has overtaken them because their job was everything. And now we're realizing our jobs, in not all cases by any means, but for the average person, you're not important. You're cogging a wheel. To you, your job is everything. To someone else, well, there's a thousand other people could do it. We're seeing that now. You thought that you had a job in a career. Now both your job and career are being challenged. Automation, transhumanism, artificial intelligence, all of these are challenging all of our presuppositions about what is sustainable in our lives. And we're not prepared for this. And we're going ahead as if, oh, I'll go and take this course in college or I'll take this without asking yourself, have I done my homework to see if there's even going to be a job there? What kind of relationship do I want? Do I want 1,000 likes and shares on a stupid computer? Or do I want to be able to sit across from someone and look them in the eyes? There's a big difference in what we then see is really important for us. You can get all the emoji kisses in the world. It's different if you get a real one. You can get all the hugs and a smile. It's different if you get a real hug and smile. So think on this and call in. Share your points of view. 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear what you have to say. And by the way, this just came in. I want to read this to you. It's from Celia Casey. And there's a video with it, and it's a really cool video. Because here she's showing what she's doing, and she's really, I mean, she's on it. Quote, besides inspiring me to get back into doing more cardio, participation in the anti-aging study has saved me during this COVID time. I feel so blessed with the protocol I follow, and I'm still following almost 5 months after I started. Seriously, Gary, journaling, your videos, meditation, and not watching any TV has been my lifeline. I've been dedicated to being stronger for years, but this new path is simply miraculous. I attach a few videos to demonstrate the work I've been doing. You always say when you're older, you must do more, and I could not agree with you more. At 72, it is indeed the fountain of youth. Thank you. And that is Celia Casey. Good for you, Celia, and others who are also succeeding. We had a wonderful email that Luann sent me from a person in the group who finished it and now is in Spain, and that it saved his life. And we know that it saved some people's life. I can tell you that. I can't mention anything more than that, but I'll just say it absolutely saved some people who would not have been here today had they not done this. So we're very pleased. But again, if they could do it, so could everyone else. It's just they had determination, changed their perception that they could do something and did it. And that's what we have to do. We have to get out of being passive, being spoon-fed, and having artificial relationship with our authentic self and embrace the real self, empower yourself, and then say, I can do it, and do it. And by the way, come the last 2 weeks of October, we're full up, by the way, don't call. We're full up for the retreat. I told people we were going to fill up, but unfortunately too many people waited too long. But for the anti-aging, the new anti-aging study, which is going to be a real hoot because I'm changing, I have to keep the protocol identical, but I'm changing the time length. Instead of 90 days, I'm doing it in 2 weeks. Now, it may not work, but it may work because I'm doing it for 35-year-olds so that the younger you start an anti-aging protocol, the longer you stay young. That's why I'm so young and vital. That's why I can work from midnight to 4. Or from 4 in the morning till midnight, and do all the things I do. Not because I'm special on any level. I'm not. It's just that I was looking at what I didn't think made any sense a long time ago, and applied what I thought was sensical. Now today, how many of you don't look your age? How many of you have energy that your peers don't have? How many of you looks 10, 20 years younger and are still strong and even athletic and your minds are sharp? Because you didn't go along with the herd, the consensus of scientists, doctors, and everyone else. They were all wrong. You were right. Now you've gotten to your destination. Turn around and look. You've reached your destination. You were on the right path, and you have a lesson to learn. They were on the wrong path. They're sick. They're dying. They're depressed. And therefore, they learn nothing. Hopefully, on the next step of their evolution, and through the next phase of their life, they will learn and they can turn it around, at least a lot of it. So I'm going to be doing a different approach because I want people who are highly motivated. No more of this having to resist everything and be negative and, oh, you have no idea what we're faced with some of the people. The older they get, the more resistant they are, and the more opinionated they are, the more reluctant they are to change anything. You remember that notion, you can't cheat. Teach old dogs new tricks. I used to think that was a stupid cliche. I realized, my God, that's an absolute truth. So we want people who have not yet codified a mind into, I'm not going to change. I want to see people who are willing to change because I'm going to do an accelerated. Because I believe I can do in 2 weeks what it would take 2 months if a person's motivated. That's the key. That's the key. And if you doubt me, talk with Sam Skinner, Louise Nottage, Thelma Wilson, Sid Howard, talk with Frank Gallo, talk with the people who, of the thousands, tens of thousands who came over the years to the running club, I asked who would like to be on an accelerated protocol. Every one of them became world champion athletes, the best in all of athleticism, icons. You mentioned Sid Howard, he's an icon, little guy, wonderful human being, couldn't be a nicer human being to meet. And Sid started in 1975. Out in the boardwalk in Coney Island, but he was on that accelerated. So it depends upon the motivation, the strength of character, the determination of a person to do what is considered not possible. That's the kind of person that climbs Mount Everest. So that's who I'm looking for. No one else. Okay? If that you don't have those qualities, don't sign up. Don't call Luann. I'll give you Luann's number. Let's see if I have Luann's number. I had it here somewhere. Yeah, Luann, 903-881-7008, 903-881-7008. I'm going to play 10 minutes of this clip. And this is between two very bright people talking about how all the institutions are captured. They were not paying attention, and now their institutions have been captured. In Matt's case, journalism, and in Brett's case, academia. And now they don't have the forms they once had, and they're both being attacked because they saw the corruption and its consequences, and they're willing to talk about it, but even the forms they have are closing down.
So far, the penetration of this has almost entirely been intellectual, right, and bureaucratic. When we talk about cancel culture, what we're usually talking about is people losing their jobs and then the accompanying problem of people being afraid to speak out. It's not yet at the level of people going, you know, being dragged off to basements and put up against the wall as they did, you know, in the early days of the Soviet Union, or, you know, thrown into ditches or whatever it is. It's not that yet, but, you know, just in the last month, we've seen so many headlines suggesting that institutional America is already almost completely consumed by these ideas. And we saw yesterday, I saw you tweeting about this, but the federal government, is adopting ideas that are, you know, frankly crazy, right? And it's very troubling.
From the point of view of the movement, I don't think it's about those things. It's almost purely about power over material things and the ability to speak openly about what's wrong with this plan, the ability to invoke something like science in order to demonstrate that a claim might be false, the ability to appeal to normal rules of due process in order to establish a claim. All of these things have to be disrupted in order for a movement based on fictions in order for it to take over. So I think I believe he was an ex NSA officer, William Binney, described many of the structures that were put in place after 9/11 as a turnkey totalitarian state. You know, the idea being that the structures were in place, but the key hadn't been turned, so it didn't feel totalitarian, but it could at any moment. And this movement actually has that element to it, where it is disrupting the things that would allow you to get in the way of its power grab, but the key hasn't been fully turned yet. It's, you know, why do you want to get rid of the police? Right. Well, there's an excuse for why you want to get rid of the police, but then there's also what you're going to do after the police are gone, because the police are really the mechanism through which all of the other mechanisms keep people from just taking what they can.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. A lot of people who are marching, who are protesting, and think they're talking about one thing, and maybe there's a minority of people who actually know what it's about. But the important thing is what's going on institutionally, and you know, both in terms of the sort of explosion of new administrative staff that has taken place on campuses, but increasingly also is taking place in companies like media companies. Sort of new decision makers who are inserting their imperatives into the work, right? So even in media, we're having situations where, like, the Intercept, right, which is one of the most liberal media companies there is, you know, there was a strong push to put in the charter of the organization that its journalistic mission was to advance anti-racist causes. Now, they haven't quite gone there yet. They sort of took a little bit of a left turn before they went all the way there. But that's something that's being pressed in a lot of media companies right now, is this idea of writing it into the mission. And that's more important, I think, than how many people are on the streets. It's like, is the institution now fully captured? Is it already demonstrated that the leaders of these institutions will respond to letters and calls for firings by indulging them, right? And I think, as you pointed out, in pretty much every case, that's already been proven to be true, right? So until somebody starts standing up and you know, resisting some of these things, and showing a way to do it, it's just going to spread to everything. You know, the big tech corporations, big media companies, academia already. It's hard to know what to do.
Here's the thing. You're right. Everybody, you can imagine how many people are telling me, my God, we're all evergreen now, right? It's like, okay, yes, you are. Now, can we go the next step? And it's like, I want to just emblazon the word extrapolate, right? Mm-hmm. On something that I can hold in front of people, because the point is, okay, if this is evergreen, and it is, I mean, the parallel is almost too close to believe, right? If this is evergreen, what happens next? I mean, first of all, look at Evergreen, right? Evergreen is a failing college. It has a quarter of the students it's supposed to have. It has no plan going forward, and it has continued down this road without ever acknowledging it made a mistake.
Right.
That's the Democratic Party, right? Joe Biden is George Bridges, and the United States is about to be evergreened, except that in the United States, there's another force that this is going to collide with, which is the well-armed rural population that has a right to be terrified that this is coming for it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I saw a news article yesterday that not only are gun sales going up, but that 40% of the sales are for first-time buyers, which I thought was a pretty amazing statistic, because we've seen in the past, you know, various moral manias that come up in the press convince people to go out and buy guns, but it's usually the people who are already
the gun enthusiasts
buying guns. Yeah, exactly. This is something new. I don't know what that means yet. I think you're probably onto something, that people are gearing up for some kind of conflict that they imagine will happen, which I hope it doesn't, but But yeah, absolutely. There's that. The only thing I would push back on with the metaphor of Biden as bridges is that, for all the craziness of all of this, Trump is an extraordinarily ineffective vehicle for harnessing the discontent and anger towards all of these processes. He did fairly well with it, I would say, just cynically watching him in 2016, but he was an unknown quantity then. And his incompetence to deal with, this unique crisis that we're in right now is, obviously I'm not going to make the same mistake of predicting again that he's going to lose, but it's very possible that Biden's going to win. And even though the Democratic Party is intellectually, I think it's just completely broken. It doesn't stand for anything anymore except for not being something else. And even that doesn't stand for that all that strongly. It could still sputter on for a little while. And what I worry about is that it will succumb to the same institutional pressures that happen at Evergreen and have happened more recently at the New York Times. It doesn't know, because it's not strong in its own identity, it's susceptible to being taken over by zealots. And I don't know how much you would worry about that, but I worry about that a little bit.
Oh, I think it's far worse than that. I think, yeah, this is becoming a theme, I guess. But the Democratic Party stands for nothing because it has become an influence peddling racket, as the Republican Party is. And as such, the only thing it does is protect its access to power. And what has happened is it has lost its argument for being awarded that power by voters. And what it is now going to do is it is going to rally a constituency by giving it something real. Mm-hmm. But what it's giving it is power over other citizens. In other words, and this is why I say it is George Bridges, right? Mm-hmm. Joe Biden is the George Bridges play, because what it's going to do is it's going to empower this counter-revolution that is now marching in our streets and marching in every single institution. It is going to empower them to keep them from going after the real culprits. So, the anger in the streets is about something real. Americans have been frozen out of a large fraction of the well-being that they've created. And in an effort to stave off the French Revolution yet one more election cycle, the people with the pitchforks and the torches are going to be awarded rights to extract stuff from other citizens. And that is what's, I just don't even see how that will be avoided. It's not that the zealots will take over the Democratic Party. It's that the Democratic Party will foolishly empower them, will cynically empower them in order to win this election and potentially future ones. And that will be the final straw.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Listen to what he just said. Let's be clear. By the way, the Bridges he was talking about was the head of the Evergreen University, where some students or provocateurs from another place, not the university, came on and were shouting and screaming and cursing him. And he's trying to be calm. You see the video. He's trying to answer their questions. He's an ultra-liberal professor, loved there. And yet the university president would not stand with him, acquiesced immediately to the screaming crowd. What he's saying now, that this is no different than, the French Revolution, where you have screaming mobs wanting blood. Didn't matter whether you were guilty or not. If someone denounced you, you were guillotined. And they guillotined everyone. And even the people who thought they would be protected, ultimately like Robespierre, who headed it, was guillotined. So we have to understand that when the Democrats, using this as a ploy, don't want any of their corporate sponsors, any of the oligarchs, any of the rich and powerful to be targeted, once you empower and go ahead and wink and nod, like the media is doing, oh, they're peaceful. They're all peaceful. They're all well-intentioned, without looking at those who are not. And who's behind all this? Amazing what happens when they empower them and then they come for them. Then see who they put forward as their next president. Far more fascistic than anyone we've ever imagined. That's what they're saying. Okay? Just a heads up. It's coming. and people in rural America are terrified. So they're getting ready for this clash, and the media is not covering this. That's unfortunate. Before we go today, I'm going to take a call here. But before I do that, I was just informed that today we can offer our first special where this, I just got this from the office. We haven't been able to give any specials because we've had such limited supply and we didn't want to run out. But we just got 4,000 bags of our superfood breakfast. This is the most delicious breakfast. It's 780 grams and you buy three bags and you get the fourth one free. You heard me right. You're saving $42.99 off the original retail price of each of these bags. So you're getting $43 discount today. You're getting a blend of instant steel-cut oatmeal and oat fiber, coconut oil, brown rice protein, flaxseed powder, almond protein, bananas and blueberries and pomegranate and watermelon and cherries and strawberries and raspberries, grapes and grapeseed extract, papaya and prunes and apples and acerola and goji and cranberry, acai, bilberry, parsley, carrots, cabbage, spinach, organic kale, organic barley grass, asparagus, spirulina, celery, onion, cauliflower, broccoli, and radish. And it took me a year because I had to figure out how to disguise the taste of the onion and the broccoli and radish that's astringent in its taste because of the sulfur. So you get this wonderful, smooth kind of vanilla almond quality. This has got your protein, your fiber. It is the most healthy, delicious breakfast you could ever have. And you're getting a $43 discount on it today. Okay? And it's our special of the day. I just got notification. It's called Superfood Breakfast. So you can't get anything better in your body in the morning. Start the day. And you can take it with you anytime, anywhere. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 to get your buy three bags, get your fourth free, plus you're getting a discount on every bag. On top of that, $43 discount today. Buy three, get your four free, plus a reduction on the retail price of every one of them. Save $43. Delicious, nutritious. Take it with you. Take it to work. Take it any place. Take it camping. Travel with it. They're nice little bags, 12 servings per bag, and you're getting four bags of the Superfood Breakfast. 877-627-5065. Listen to our program today. I'm sorry I can't take more calls, but we'll say hello to Reuben from Virginia. Hi, Reuben.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. I want to congratulate you on the hard work you did about preserving the right to take vitamins and nutritional supplements. As you know, in New York State, there are 29 professional boards. One of them is called the Diet and Nutritional Board. These are the part of the educational department that licenses different professions. Actually, you know that because you're a licensed dietitian and nutritionist in the Dietetics and Nutrition Board. The board meetings are open. They are held four times a year, and I've been going to several of the different board meetings, including the medical board meeting, massage board meeting, and the Dietetics and Nutrition Board meeting just by accident because I ended up going into the wrong room at one time. So as I sat there wondering what they were talking about, because I thought I was in the medical board meeting, I hear that the New York State has approved a license called Dietetics and Nutrition for dietitians. And the board was in the middle of discussing how they were going to restrict people from being able to get nutritional supplements and people to make nutritional claims. That law has been passed by the New York State Legislature already, and now the board is discussing how they're going to implement this law. So even though you've nationwide have had a great impact on what's going on, in New York State right now, as we're sitting here listening, the boards are discussing how to divvy up who's going to be able to control nutritional supplements and nutritional claims. It's happening now. It's in the board meetings. It's already been approved by legislature. Something has to be done immediately. The board meetings are open to the public. Anybody can go on the website. I'll give it to you. Find out when the next board meeting is. You can attend the board meetings. They're not allowed to restrict you from being there. Unfortunately, you can't say anything. You can't ask any questions. You can just sit there. you'll find out what's really happening in nutrition and dietetics in New York State. Every state has a board like this, but this is the most offensive way of going about this in the back room. The website is op.nysed.gov, op.nysed.gov. You can click on the boards in general, and you can click on the secretary of the board, whose name is Jason Kramer. His number is 518-474-3817. You can ask when the next meeting is, and you can be he'll take your name, and they'll give you permission to come to the next meeting. I think the meetings now, because of COVID, are on the Internet, so it's easy for everybody to check in and see what's going on behind closed doors. I want to thank you for the opportunity to share this information with you, and congratulate you and bless you that all your successful endeavors shall be rewarded.
Well, we're going to keep on this. I'm going to be announcing on Monday's show about New York State is about to ban glyphosate, and I just have to get the information on that a little later, and I'll have that for you. We have to keep diligent, because the moment we think we've won a victory, they have time and money and resources to patiently wait until they can once again insinuate a new law that can undermine what we already have gained. Thank you. I appreciate that, Reuben from Virginia. We're out of time, everyone. Just remember, this program is here principally to empower people. And if it means that for a moment in time we have to rethink, change our perception, should we not be engaged in these issues? Because if we're not, who is? And what are they up against? How formidable are the people who have something to gain and we have everything to lose? So one day we don't think it's important, I've got other things to do, and then they say, oh, you didn't know? Yeah, New York passed a law, you can't take your supplements anymore. And you think, what, what? How'd that happen? That's what it means. We must all be diligent at this time. And many of you are. Have a nice day, everyone.